Hi, my name is Dave Klonke, and you're listening to This Is Working, the podcast for entrepreneurs who want to create world-class businesses. Throughout this series, we'll talk about strategies and tactics leaders use to establish a unique position in a crowded marketplace. We'll interview successful business owners and see how they work and what works for them when building their brands. Hello and welcome to the This Is Working podcast. I'm your host, Dave Klonke, and thank you for joining us today. This is the very first podcast that I've done, and what better way to get things started than to talk about a topic that is near and dear to me. It's a topic that I covered in my new book, Expand, and it's also a topic which is the question on the cover of my book, why we put chips and bags and cereal in boxes. Sometimes it's the smallest tweaks that turn businesses around and elevate companies above the competition. Sure, you have to focus on price and profitability and have an emphasis on customer service, but what could be that one thing so remarkably different that changes the competitive landscape and makes your idea the skyscraper amongst a bunch of 30-story gray buildings? Huh? Typically, it happens when you turn off the autopilot and look closely at the day-to-day operations of your company. We laugh about the saying, you park in a driveway and drive in a parkway, right? Here's another one. Why do potato chips come in bags while cereal is packaged in a cardboard box? I have no idea. I don't know the answer. And it would seem that it would make more sense if those products completely swapped packaging, right? Each chip is much bigger than an average piece of cereal, which makes it more susceptible to breakage in a plastic bag. You never grab the first bag of chips you see. You always take a look and kind of gently squeeze around the bag to make sure you're buying a bag that consists of whole chips and not cracked up crumbs, right? Conversely, cereal is more durable. The smaller pieces, you know, that are hardened by the sugary cornstarch ingredients hold up in shipping much better and can handle the abuse they may take on their way from the plant to the supermarket. So why does it need a box? Great question. And the answer probably would surprise you. Actually, there are two answers. One answer is that's how they've always done it. The second answer is everyone else is doing it. Look at the cereal aisle. It's all boxes of various colors and sizes, but they're all boxes. Nothing breaks the look other than color, images, text, what have you. Imagine seeing brightly colored and designed bags of cereal between all those boxes. That would grab your attention, right? A few years back, Target, which we're all familiar with, introduced a newly designed pill bottle. It involved a square design that allowed for the label to be more easily read. And we all can visualize what a typical pill bottle looks like. It has that white cap that you push down and twist, and it has a round cylinder type tube that's kind of transparent, brown or orange, what have you. But this new Target bottle, you can only guess what color this bottle was, right? It's made by Target. So of course it was red, right? So it involved a square design, no longer round. It was color-coded. So think about this. Color-coded bottle. The product design here is unbelievable. It's color-coded so various family members could quickly identify their prescriptions. And it opened at the bottom while the label covered one flat side and rolled over the top. Very easy to apply, right? It was a groundbreaking design. It really was. And forget for a moment that the design helped the user identify the medication. That's obviously very important, but it was also a clear reminder that you filled this prescription at Target. So when it was time to go back, you didn't just go to CVS, you didn't just go to Walgreens, you went back to Target. There was no confusion as to where that bottle originated. So that they really changed the, you know, that's how they've always done it, and everyone else is doing it. As an entrepreneur, I tend to cringe at that phrase, quote, that's how we've always done it, and everyone should. It really, it's a form of autopilot. When leaders and their teams let every day blend into the next, it's that it's ripe for the same old, same old. In this day and age, and with competition the way that it is, same old just doesn't cut it. It's not an option anymore. It doesn't just apply to consumer product-based businesses like Target or Frito-Lay or Kellogg's. It's true for every type of business, whether you're large or small, whether you provide a product or a service, everyone can be affected by this. There are so many examples of companies that have come out of nowhere and challenged the behemoths in their marketplace. Just think of Uber and Lyft. Look at how they have taken on the traditional taxi cab system by introducing technology that makes the process for both the driver and the passenger so simple and so effective. Why didn't the traditional taxi cab companies come up with that? Why didn't they think of that? Because one, that's how they've always done it. And two, everyone else is doing it. Nobody else was doing it differently. Nothing forced them to change the way they approach their business model. You can pretty much guarantee that the traditional cab companies are responding. Well, you know they are. You can read in the media, in the papers, lawsuits, lobbyists. They're all going after and trying to stop Uber and stop Lyft because it's affecting their industry. They're responding now because they were forced to. There was a shift in their industry. They were forced to make a change. Uber's revenues in 2015 were $1.5 billion. So it's obvious the game has changed forever, right? There are also other companies that are challenging those high-priced items that traditionally had little alternative options. Think of sunglasses or eyeglasses and razor blades. Warby Parker, I love this company. I've used them multiple times. They will sell you a pair of glasses, prescription and all, for $100 and some change, depending on if you get a few extra things. But I get my glasses, which are Coke bottle glasses, and I'm out the door for $130. I go to an eye doctor, an ophthalmologist, and they'll charge me $500-$600 for a similar pair of glasses. I order mine at Warby Parker. I wear my glasses at night. They suit me just fine. And, you know, I tell my eye doctor I'm ordering from Warby Parker. And he's like, well, the fit isn't quite there and this and that. Well, maybe it's not. But you know what? I see the value. And I don't see the value in the $600 frame, right? Razor blades. There's a big thing going on. Harry's razor blades, maybe you've heard of them, is heavily being challenged throughout social media by Gillette. Gillette sells razor blades for God knows how much. I mean, over $20 for a pack of blades. It's ridiculous. I hate shaving, but I still got to buy them. I eventually got to shave. I bought Harry's, very similar blades, half the price. Great product designed. I don't have, you know, razor bumps or anything. Hey, works great. I'm now a loyal Harry's customer. I use Gillette from the first day I started shaving. No more. So are these, the big question is, are these products just as good as the predecessors, the leading brands? Well, you have to be the judge, but they are competing for the same customer. The difference is they're using tools and approaches that the longtime leaders, for whatever reason, refuse to address. Think of cereal and boxes. They refuse to address that there may be a better way. So was it hubris, laziness? I don't know, but it's exciting to see entrepreneurs launching brands, not only for new categories, but also within the tired areas like shaving and transportation networks. Again, these aren't Me Too companies. I'll talk a lot about Me Too, Me T-O-O companies, or Me T-W-O companies. There's a difference, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. If you read my book, there's a chapter on Me Too and Me Too, two different twos, and you'll hear all about that. But they're redefining these categories altogether, and it's great. So ask yourself, in your business, how you can improve some of your processes. Maybe it's how you communicate with your customers on a daily basis. Perhaps it's how you deliver and package your products or services. There are ways it's historically been done, and there are ways it can be improved. Nothing should be sacred in how you conduct business. Nothing. Look at every angle with a perspective that nothing can't be fixed or improved. You'll be amazed at what you see in the opportunity to stand out in your industry. So I thank you for listening today, and I encourage you to really think about the topics that we talk about here, and I'd love to hear your feedback, and I look forward to sharing more topics and information in a future episode.
Thank you for listening to the This Is Working podcast. This series is presented by Sozo Pivotal. Sozo Pivotal is a brand strategy and design firm that helps businesses differentiate and create world-class brands. For more information, visit sozopivotal.com. If you like what you hear today, please take a moment and go to iTunes to subscribe, review, and share the This Is Working podcast. We'll see you next time.